There are parts of the science where I'm like, all right, like the, it's just like it's scary to see it from a perspective that small when it's like this is a family and they're just hanging out and it's like, oh, the world is being attacked.
I remember being super scared of signs.
Dude, when he
like well, stop signs cool. and yield signs and
Hello, everybody.
Hey,
you're listening to Out of Dodge, a podcast hosted by us. I'm Trevor,
and I'm Shane,
and we went to film school. Shane, what are we doing? What do we do on this podcast? What do we for the first time listeners? What are we talking about?
We normally talk about movies, TV shows that we like. Normally, we talk about maybe deep dive into a genre. We usually watch a little bit of bad television, and then we talk about some news.
Today, we are looking at action films, kind of in celebration of the new Mortal Kombat movie that came out a few weeks ago. You're asking yourself, you know, what defines an action movie? You know, from Wikipedia, it's a protagonist or series of protagonists, you know, who are kind of put into scenarios that are larger than life, kind of fantastical even. That often include violence, extended fight scenes, physical feats, rescues, and or chase sequences. Throughout the film, a hero will struggle through incredible odds and deal with life-threatening dangers. More often than not, escape victorious, often setting up a sequel. That's a very, like, broad kind of oversimplification of the genre.
Action is so incredibly broad as a genre. Like, a lot of movies, like crime movies, alien invasions, disaster movies, superhero movies, all of that can kind of be lumped in as action films because action is usually a driving force in that plot. And yeah, sure, it's easy to kind of overlook or, you know, misjudge action movies as all being the same, but a lot of our favorite, like, cinematic moments are usually action moments. You know, like, big climactic fights, or chase scenes, or huge battles. Like, all of that is action. And I think that is, you know, should be celebrated.
I do believe one of the first American narrative films, The Great Train Robbery, is considered to be one of the first action films. And that's from, like, what, like, the 30s or something like that? And so, are you looking this up? Are you going to make fun of me for getting the date wrong?
Oh my god, it's from
1903.
Yeah, right? What the fuck?
You know, that, since 1903, that's a thing that we're drawn to, is showing action and all its glory and lack thereof sometimes, too. Because some movies are bad. Well, so, Shane, you earlier mentioned that it's such a broad genre and encompasses, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, adventure, all these different other subgenres within the main action genre.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things that kind of bridge the gaps between those, you know, that we see kind of time and again in every film that is within that genre? You know, or is there anything that kind of links these on a thematic or stylistic point of view?
I think a good action movie, regardless of what subgenre it's playing with, is going to have, like, a solid character motivation. Like, why is this particular person the best one suited for the job? Like, why are they the ones trying to stop a giant tornado or alien criminals or what have you? I also think the stakes should be high. The end of the world comes up almost all the time. I also think it's important to kind of have somewhat fast-paced and kinetic sequences. Like, you kind of want to have either memorable combat or memorable chase destruction sequences. I think it's important to kind of have cool shit going on, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, even if it makes, like, next to no sense, it's always gonna benefit a movie to have a cool fight scene in it, or a cool, you know, action sequence. Because then someone leaving the movie was like, oh, that airplane sequence, oh, that was rad. On the technical side, CGI, you know, computer generated imagery, that's more recently been a staple of action films. It's not necessarily needed. It does tend to complement the genre quite well. There was this time in history in the early 2000s where they're like, we'll just put CGI everywhere and everything. And, you know, sometimes it worked and then sometimes it didn't. And then, you know, maybe back in like, I think 2015, maybe this coincided more with like John Wick and okay. kind of that franchise ballooning into what it is now. People were like, well, no, we want to see like real people doing real stunts and like no more CGI. We want practical things. And so it's kind of been a rebirth, a re-renaissance of that. And there's some films like Mad Max Fury Road that like really leaned heavily on practical effects, which was only then complemented by certain computer-generated graphics. For the most part, what you're seeing on that screen is like real stuff. Or was, because they destroyed a lot of things.
I think a lot of it depends on, like, what the scale that you're trying to tell is. Like, for John Wick, it's all very kind of, like, street-level fighting and a lot of hand-to-hand combat. I mean, he does shoot yeah. a lot of people, but a lot of it's very close quarters and stuff like that. But if you're trying to make a movie about, you know, aliens invading or, you know, the end of the world or, like, superheroes, then obviously CGI is going to come into the mix.
Oh, yeah. And even in John Wick, there's CGI, you know, and like there's no film that exists now. I mean, I feel like very, very few films exist without CGI.
Well, yeah, we have computers, you know, we gotta use
them. Yeah, we're gonna use them. For me, I see a lot of times like the hero's journey.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the presentation of like conflict, the initial rejection of conflict, and then realizing, oh, I gotta do this. I gotta do the thing. And then going on a journey with, like, ups and downs throughout the plot. I do, though, think that's pretty, just, like, pretty standard, just in, like,
movies.
Narrative structure. Yeah, just, like.
But I do understand what you mean, because with action movies, there is, you know, a definite call to action. And usually the inciting incident is aggressively obvious. You know what I mean? Like, not for all. I'm not saying there aren't movies that subvert that, but usually action movies do follow this one guy or one girl can do this, and they're the only ones that can save us, you know.
Something else I wanted to mention, too, is the term reactionary versus active when in terms of, like, antagonist and protagonist. Because a lot of times in action films, you have a hero that is more passive, a little bit more reactionary, and you have the antagonist be the driving force of the plot. An example, Die Hard. John McClane comes to L.A. for a few laughs, you know? And then Hans Gruber shows up, taking over Nakatomi Plaza. You know, he wants the things. He's driving the plot and the action. Right? Because he's bringing guns, he's shooting people, he's throwing people out windows. And John McClane, he's having to react to the antagonist as opposed to, like, you know, taking proactive measures. His actions are derived from the villain's actions, from Han's actions. Yeah.
I can't tell you the number of times where this is somebody who is great in the military or a great spy or an equalizer, whatever. And then somebody does something bad, and they're like, well, I have to stop them, because that's not okay.
Yeah.
You know, so there is a lot of people being reactionary and trying to stop a villain who is very, like, charismatic or intelligent and just fucking shit up all over the place. But it's fun to watch.
But also, like, having villains with, like, pretty clear common goals. You know, like, I want money, I want power, you know. Obviously dress it up a bit so it's not just the same thing over and over again, but
it should,
you know,
be clear cut. Yeah,
exactly. Something that we can be like, ah, I know what he wants to get, and I can see kind of steps that he's going to take throughout the film to get
there. And it's important to be like, oh, if the hero loses, then you know exactly what will happen. Like, the stakes should be clear. Like, this is going to get destroyed, this weapon's going to go off, this guy's going to become like supreme overlord of Earth, whatever. It's good to know, because then you're rooting for the hero to stop them from doing the terrible thing.
There's just so many movies where it's like, what does the villain want? It's like, well, the villain wants the hero to think they're winning and then be like, ah, psych, you're losing now because I planned for that. And it's like, keep it simple, stupid, you know? My last little thing that I want to mention.
Sure.
On the checklist of making a good action film.
Uh-huh.
Clever, effective, and competent cinematography.
That is very helpful. I agree.
It was a weird renaissance of shaky cam in like 2007, 2008. And they're like, what if we just shook a camera like a crying baby and then we put it on the screen? We put it on a screen the size of a house and hopefully people don't get dizzy. Did I tell you the one film I actually threw up during?
No, you didn't.
Battle LA. But I sat down in the movie theater with my dad and we were watching it. And it's all, you know, big shaky cam. Things are exploding, yada yada. And I'm like, God, I don't feel good. Oh, I feel real bad. I gotta go. And I ran to the AMC bathroom. Did my business, came back, and I was like, I don't want to watch this movie. I, like, feel seasick. Sweepy, don't do that.
One movie that I think does cinematography really well is this movie called Upgrade from 2018.
Yes.
And in this movie, there's this guy, and he's not very big on technology. But then some terrible things happen to him, you know, and his girlfriend dies. And they're like, hey, we give you this crazy chip in your brain, and you can do revenge. And he's like, okay. But the chip, like, the way it's shot really makes you see how he's been enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are times when he dodges, and the camera will dodge with it, or they'll do that. One of my favorite cinema tricks is when somebody does a flip and the camera will roll with them, and I'm like, shit, that's fucking cool. And it's a really cool movie because the chip in his brain, like, makes him good at fighting, but he doesn't realize it, so his facial reactions will be like, what the fuck, even though his hands are like snapping necks and throwing people off buildings. It's cool, I recommend it. But it's also a lesson in how the camera can help show how the action is flowing, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And make you feel like you're there, but not like you're ill.
Exactly. Speaking of ill, did you ever see Hardcore Henry?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, because that's a weird fever dream of a movie for me.
It is a fever dream of a movie. I'm gonna say, though, the highway sequence, pretty great.
Pretty good, yeah.
It's a pretty great scene in that film.
It's pretty good. It's just, it's just exhausting. This is a really tiring film. For anyone that doesn't remember this, it was the first person action film. VR was getting big and everything, and so they were like, well, let's just make a movie that's kind of in first person. People like COD, right? let's just put him in that. Honestly, did you see it in theaters?
No.
Yeah, I don't know how anyone could watch that in theaters.
I think it's one of those things where for like a 10-minute sequence, sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Whole movie?
Doom?
Don't know.
Yeah. No.
Don't know,
no,
but
no.
The whole one.
Do you have anything, or can we talk about Mortal Kombat now?
I'll open the floodgates.
Mortal Kombat, a movie. Streaming on HBO Max now.
They had me in the first half of the film.
Yeah.
Before they get to the temple. Or whatever the fuck, in the desert. I was like, you know what? Maybe this will be so fun and silly that I'm going to like it. The invisible reptile dude kind of looked great. Like, those were cool special effects. They ripped its heart out. Sub-Zero was, like, terrifying and, like, breaking arms and killing people. The opening sequence with the fucking gardening tool thing.
The first 20 minutes of the film were the best 20 minutes
like 10,
of any film.
People get slaughtered. I'm like, this
it's
is
great.
Cool. I love this guy. But then they get to the temple, and then like the plot of the movie is like, hey, we're the plot of the movie, and things slow down so much. And I think the idea is that, okay, there's this other world, and they want to fight us in Mortal Kombat. And if we win, cool. But if they win, Earth gets destroyed. Not a great compromise. What do we get? We don't even get money.
Yeah,
out
if
of
we
that.
Win, if we win, do we get to destroy Outworlds or whatever? Right?
You never really get a feeling of what it means if they win, so it doesn't feel like a threat.
Also, it doesn't feel like the Outworlds are even a cool place to be because it's just like a quarry, you know?
Yeah, it really
it's just
sand
and
a
dirt.
Bunch of rocks and people standing around talking about how they want to go to Earth or whatever. I will say, and this is not the fault of the actor; it's more of a writing thing. I didn't love the Australian guy too much.
Oh, Kano?
Part of it was because he was super racist to the point where I was like, this guy is not going to be a good guy in this film, so why are we doing this whole dance where we give him his superpower and then let him go?
Yeah, no, he was a bad dude.
Not a great call. Not a great call, team.
Shang Tsung, who is the emperor or whatever of, or he's the big honcho of the evil team.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I don't want Mortal Kombat to happen because we might lose, which is like such a weird confidence to have. And so he's like, what we're going to do is kill everybody on Earthrealm that was, like, invited to Mortal Kombat. The thing that bugs me, though, is that this movie was called Mortal Kombat, but there was not a single Mortal Kombat in it. It wasn't the tournament, you know?
No, it wasn't.
It was about avoiding a Mortal Kombat by killing everybody that was invited to Mortal Kombat.
Which triggered a kind of Mortal Kombat, but also not really a Mortal Kombat.
Which, I have to say, they're all terrible at killing people. The Outworlds folks, they only kill one person who was invited to Mortal Kombat. That was Kung Lao. But yeah, that was like Shang Tsung's ate his soul. You know, that's kind of cheating.
Yeah, and he still got somebody before that even.
Yeah.
You know, he cut that lady in half with his hat.
Yeah, so Kung Lao has the hat that like is also a saw blade. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Weird power to like discover.
To
the other thing. So
yep.
I don't know about the lore of the game.
I know nothing about it at all.
They describe it in the movie as, oh, well, it's like, you know, only people that have the Mortal Kombat invitation can unlock their true powers, you know, inside. And so it's kind of like a lottery of if you get a shitty power like a hat or a cool power like big old robot arms. It's kind of a weird narrative way of kind of writing off magic and be like, ah, only certain people and Raiden have magic. Kung Lao, like, did he always have that hat and then was like, oh, I can teleport with it and also throw it like a saw. That's my power. Or did he just like think really hard and the magic hat like appeared one day and he's like, I guess I can use that to teleport and stuff.
I do like the idea that he was wearing the hat and then it became magic and that it could have been any hat. Like it could have been a baseball hat and then it would have also just been a powerful saw capable of cutting people in half.
I mean, that'd be pretty cool. But our main character is an original character. It's like a real fanfic, this movie. His name is Cole Young, and he loves to fight, but he also hates to lose. And that's what he does the whole movie, pretty much. He just gets beat up.
Not to be mean, and this is nothing Please. Against the guy who played him, but I do think his motivations were a little boring, because it was kind of like, I had to protect my family, kind of. I don't know. Here I am.
Yeah.
It just wasn't, there wasn't anything about like, oh, does he have a legacy to live up to, or does he think he's capable of saving the world, or does he really believe in himself and his abilities? It was just kind of muddled, you know?
Well, yeah, because also his legacy, because which we do learn later, Scorpion, who is like this demon, is his like great-great-great-grandfather, you know? And so that's his legacy, right? And that'd be so cool to be like, you know, for him to know that his great grandfather was like this ninja, you know, that'd be cool if he was like, yeah, you know, my he's a ninja, you know, that's kind of why I fight, you know, to live on the family legacy. And then he realizes, oh, I got to do Mortal Kombat stuff and I got powers. And then, you know, it gives a little bit more oomph to that Sub-Zero Scorpion Cole end. Yeah, because it's like, look, they're all working together, and like it's this legacy he was talking about. But then we only find out about Scorpion being his ancestor.
We're kind of late,
because Raiden at like minute 70 was like, your guy was the greatest ninja in the world, and then he got killed, so I guess maybe not that great. But he could kill by magic, so you know.
It was a lot of cheap shots. He did send like 40 people after him, and then he showed up at the tail end. Oh, also,
then he had ice powers.
Killed his family. Like,
Outworld
does not play fair. They still lose real hard, but
they do. The most hard anyone could.
Yeah, they lose. I don't know, everybody. what do we lose? A racist? Okay.
Well, we lost Kung Lao, though, you know?
Oh,
we lost true. Hat.
I did
we
like
lost
him.
A hat.
I'm sorry.
So what do you think of the characters? We got Sonya Blade. We got Jax. You already said Kano as like a pretty all-around terrible dude.
The terrible guy. Didn't love.
Like, big surprise he was going to be evil.
Yeah, not at all.
You know, you got Liu Kang doing fireballs and stuff. He's pretty all right power. He was jacked beyond all belief.
There was a lot of that going around. Dude, that fire dragon, though.
It's real cool.
Give me that.
Real cool.
Give me that.
We love a dragon.
When Sonya killed Kano, which was a great time, with a guard gnome, might I add.
Yeah.
Her power was like these arm cannons that could just cut holes in the middle of people, and I'm like, that's great. I'd like that one. That's a good power.
Not shove them down. Just
like a just
blow them up.
Just go, your stomach's gone. Your head's gone. But I think Cole's powers were kind of stupid.
No, we're gonna talk about this because Cole powers. He got a nightstick and like
kind of a Black
sword.
Panther suit, but not. You know, I don't. Did it but redistribute power or did it just? Block power.
I think it just blocked power. Oh. But also didn't cover his head, so it just, someone hits him in the head, it's like, well, he's dead.
Look, it's a horrible rule of cinema. It's like, you want a helmet, but you don't want to ruin anybody's hair. So it's just like, what do you do?
Well, the thing that gets me is that he was an original character, you know?
Yeah.
And
they could have done anything.
Like, they changed Kano's power because he was, like, kind of half cyborg a little bit. He had, like, a robot eye. And stuff in the video games. And, you know, and they were like, well, we're just going to give him a laser eye because that's pretty sick. But they chose Cole to have just armor that spawns out of nowhere. You know, I am
like
a little confused.
The Infinite Cosmic Force was like, we know you're not that good, so we're just going to give you armor so you don't get killed.
Because Cole gets beat up. In every instance, he could get beat up.
He doesn't really get, like, he doesn't really get a moment where it's like, this guy is great. Like, sure, he takes out the forearmed dude, you know, in a fight that's not super cool to watch. But he doesn't really get, like, a moment of kind of like, this is me. I'm truly in my power and I know who I am. And mostly because Scorpion kind of steals that thunder, I would say.
At the temple, things go south. Kano turns on them, big surprise. And, you know, they all have to, like, they go into the void where no one from Outworlds could ever find them. Don't know why they just aren't training in there, you know?
Just,
I feel like
just,
that'd be pretty all right.
It's the mirror universe from Doctor Strange, you know what I mean? It only exists when it's convenient.
And so they're like, well, what do we do? And Cole's like, well, I'm the leader now. And they're like, okay. And so he devises this plan to separate the different Outworld bad guys and beat them up and kill them all. And so, like, Jax, you know, beats up somebody's brain and, like, kills him. Sonya kills Kano without having any powers, mind you.
With the guard gnome. It's because Kano
with
the
guard gnome. And he has laser eyes.
Well,
so, like,
she has been training for, like, a billion years.
That's true, yeah. Liu Kang, like, summons a fire dragon.
It's awesome.
And, you know, it eats somebody. Cole gets his ass beat by Melina again.
Until Sonya rolls
until
up.
Until Sonya.
And then blows her into pieces.
And I'm like, he never like, wins a fight on his own.
At the end of the movie, Cole is fighting Sub-Zero and not winning. Okay, and then Scorpion just ends him completely in the most brutal way. He takes off his little mask and then just melts him into ashes.
It's also weird, this movie, and I get it because they have to, like, they have to say the video game thing because, like, you know, the fan service and stuff. But Sub-Zero's like, ah, Kenji, seeing you after all these years, like, I'm gonna kill you. And he, like, takes off his mask. He's like, it's Scorpion now. And I'm like, you don't need to say that. I'm like, you don't need to say that, man.
No, when he showed up, there should have been just text on the screen that said Scorpion has arrived.
My thought was his nickname as a ninja should have just been Scorpion. You know, it's not like a big twist that he's Scorpion.
It is one of those things where, on one hand, like you said, they didn't even really do the Mortal Kombat because the bad guys were trying to not do Mortal Kombat the whole movie.
Yeah.
But in some ways, it felt like it was almost too much like the video game, where they were trying to shoehorn in all the one-on-one fights, even if it didn't make sense 100% narratively. And I was like, I kind of like that rambunctious energy at the beginning of the film, where you didn't really know where they were going or what they were going to do.
Yeah.
But then they were like, no, we have to stop it for the lore. And I'm like, oh, no, buddy, you yeah. didn't have to stop it. We don't have to have racist dinner time.
Also, Raiden, who is like a god, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the worst. This doesn't do anything.
He's like, well, we can't intervene. And I'm like, they just invaded the planet and just kill people whenever they want to. If they're not playing by yeah. the rules, why do we have to play by the rules?
And also, is it every like 7 years? Like, when is, how often is Mortal Kombat?
I don't know, because they say like Earth is lost, and I'm like, when? Why? If we
because
not
if
noticed?
Earth lost, wouldn't we be obliterated?
I don't
Isn't
know.
That the rules?
Maybe they were fighting other people and then they finally got to us.
My thought was that like all the different realms enter. So it's not just like a, you know,
okay.
Outworlds versus Earthworlds. It's like, you know, March Madness with killing.
So what if we beat like Saturn and Mars and then we're stuck with Outworlds?
Yeah. The gas giant falls to Earth. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know, man. It was a fun time. I'm not going to say I didn't
yeah,
have fun.
Yeah, no, there were a lot of cool moments that I really liked.
I do but... like how they were like, hey, we need to have a fight probably every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And that happened. Well, there was a good fight or not, you know.
Who can say?
Who can say? But yeah, no, it was a fun time. A lot of good fight choreography. Oddly enough.
I mean, the effects were cool. The violence was there. Some of the characters were entertaining.
Some of the CG was like, you know, hit or miss. We got a good old reptile, but then the whole temple looked like garbage.
The reptile and the fire dragon and the frozen arms. A lot more of it works than I would have expected when they announced this movie. That is what I will say. Did it all work? Hell no.
No. Have you seen the original Mortal Kombat?
I have not.
I'm going to have to say it's probably better. Probably better. The originals really were campy, and they leaned into that. Less so in this. It probably could have afforded to be a little bit more silly.
I think it should have been, especially when like it was so nebulous as to what the bad guys like were and what they wanted to do. And I was like,
yeah.
Who? What?
And like every time they kill a bad guy, they're like, "Well, we have more bad guys." I'm like,
they're like,
well,
"We have armies upon armies," and then
send them. You know, why don't you just invade?
Do it.
What's
Do you know what a nuclear missile is? Outworld, do you think we care that you have one dragon lady? Okay.
Yeah.
No, sorry.
Out of the
sorry, they have no dragon ladies. All right.
That's true. She got sawed in half.
So what are you gonna do?
Did you want to list off some? Good action movies. Some action movies
sure.
that like work for you.
I do want to talk about The Raid. Sometimes called The Raid Redemption, depending on where it is, which was made in 2011. And the plot is basically there's this team of cops and they're trying to break into this building and arrest this crime lord. But the crime lord's on the top of the building and it's a billion stories tall and so many guys they have to fight. And it's fucking brutal. It's hand-to-hand combat and people trying to shoot you that are right in front of you. And it's just insane. And it's so well choreographed. Like, it's one of those movies where, like, you don't have time to breathe, but it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just so fast.
That's
cool.
And
I love that. I love that so much. In a different vein, but they also have some really good close-quarter stuff, is the first Kingsman. Not the second Kingsman.
Yeah.
Never watched that.
No.
But Kingsman the Secret Service from 2014 was like such a great surprise as a film, because we all saw the trailer and we're like, a spy movie, okay. But then you go into theaters and see it and you're like, this is so violent. And just it's so violent, and the fight choreography is really good and fast, and all these like absurd spy devices, like this umbrella shoots people and you're like, whatever. But then you see it happen, you're like,
oh,
cool.
Oh.
And that's a lot of fun. But it also has a fun villain who immediately is like, I want to destroy humanity because there's too much humanity and I'm insane. And you're like, great.
If I could mention a movie,
of course,
that has also to go kind of back to The Raid a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Dread. That's really good.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, it's, I feel like it's on par with Mortal Kombat in terms of quality. But it's interesting. It has some good fight choreography. And the whole slow-mo aspect, like that drug
thing.
Oh, yeah,
thing. The drug that, yeah.
Super cool.
That well. I'm going to give a shout-out to a bit of an underdog of a film, but White House Down, which it came out at the same time as Olympus Has Fallen, a bad film. But White House Down is such a campy good time, and it really just is Die Hard in the White House.
Yeah.
But it's just absurd. And it's like this crazy plot of the president is trying to get us to stand down in the Middle East, and then a bunch of fucking weapons manufacturers from America are like, no, that's bad. And to prove our point, we'll destroy the Capitol. And I'm like, wow, for one, timely. But number two, it's a lot of fun. And there's like, there's great, there's fun dialogue, and it's just absurd. And you're running around, mm-hmm. and they drive the fucking presidential limo into the pool.
Nice.
It's just a stupid good time. It's just a good time.
Did you saw Olympus Has Fallen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think the biggest, because it's two films that came out probably within 6 months of each other, right? That are almost similar premises, you know?
Yes.
What do you think, why did one succeed and why did one fail?
Well, technically the bad one succeeded. And I think that's because they made it for less and because people are wrong sometimes. In my personal opinion, the reason White House Down is a better film is because it makes a little more sense plot-wise. And I think the action's a lot better. And I just think it, as a plot and the effects, much more streamlined. In Olympus Has Fallen, it's like, it's North Korea. And I'm like, they couldn't do that, man. They couldn't get, they couldn't do it. And I just feel like they really go out of their way to be like, the bad guys aren't white and we have to stop them from coming over here. And I'm like, that's not great. I don't love that. I don't love that at all.
No, no, no. Wasn't it also the North Koreans in the
New Red Dawn? Both Red Dawns are pretty bad. I think the best Red Dawn is actually this Australian movie called Tomorrow When the War Begins. Because it's about a bunch of, like, teens who go camping in the woods, and they go, like, crazy far off, and there's no cell reception. And they're like, yeah. And then they come back, and their whole town's been taken over.
Yeah.
And it's just this, like, crazy wild thing. But the characterizations are good, and you like everybody. And they have to blow up a bridge, but they don't know what they're doing. And it's fun. It has those stakes that we were talking about that I like.
I mean, I've been mentioning it all night, but Mad Max Fury Road is, like, my go-to action movie. When I just want some carnage, when I want some cool things to look at, that movie, so goddamn good.
It's
holy hell.
It's fucking great. It's fucking great. It's mind-blowing. I think I went to see it on my birthday, and I remember hearing all the hype, and I'm like, there's no way it can be that good. And then I saw it, and I was like, wow, what the fuck? It was that good?
I saw it at a drive-in, and I was like, eh, that's fine. That's all right. And then someone was like, no, you have to, like, sit in a movie theater and watch this. And I was like, fine. And then I did, and I spent the next, like, 3 weeks doing, like, Mad Max lore. Mad Max, like, the thing that I think, if you are a fan of that film, or just a fan of practical effects in general, I think on YouTube, there's a bunch of, like, mini featurettes on the different cars and the different props of that film. And they talk through the process of, like, how each car is a reflection of who's driving it. And that's so cool. And that adds a whole, like, visual level to the storytelling that a lot of films just don't think about, you know? Because they're like, oh, he drives an Acura or whatever. But it's, like, all this stuff is custom and, like, you know, they built all the cars themselves. It just adds a whole level of personality to the film. I appreciate that film so goddamn much. So good.
Edge of Tomorrow from 2014, and it also falls into my favorite subgenre of all time, which is time loop films, which there are a surprising number of. But basically, aliens invade, but they use time travel tricks to destroy us. But then we hack into that bullshit, and we're like, we're gonna beat you with your own time bullshit. It's just a lot of fun. It's like a really fun visual film full of a lot of great, like, tricks and jumps, and it's just fucking wacky. It's a good time.
That's such a good movie, too. The action in that is, like, it's pretty brutal. He gets run over by so many cars.
He gets, like, crushed by a plane and run over and eaten and then eaten again. And then there's one time when he's like, I'm not going to do the war. You know, in that part of the movie where the hero gives up and he just goes to get drunk in London. And then the aliens invade and he gets eaten anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nice try, Tom Cruise.
That film uses action as, like, a point in the narrative. So it's not just action for just, you know, action's sake. It's like, this means something for the plot, for the narrative.
Yeah, because otherwise humanity will end.
Yeah. The stakes, you know, again, are real.
Yeah.
Another Alien movie.
Oh.
Aliens.
That's on my list, too.
Oh, cool. Good. The first Alien is, I would say, thriller slash horror almost,
yeah,
right?
It's pretty straight horror, I would say.
Yeah, and then James Cameron got the reins to the machine and was like, hey, what if we do Marines in Space, hoorah? And it works! It's such a departure from the original. It ditches a lot of the claustrophobic kind of nature of the original film for, like, kind of balls-to-the-wall action.
Yeah.
Which is, it's pretty rad.
So at the end of the movie, she fights this giant alien queen, and that was a fucking puppet.
Yeah.
And it's so big, and they were like, it took like 15 people to work it, and I'm like, that's cinema, baby. That's nuts. And
it's crazy.
She fights it with like a space forklift, and then just punches it into space, and I'm like, this is the best film of all time.
I feel like that's the kind of the magic that's missing nowadays.
Yeah.
Because even at with the original Mortal Kombat, right, Goro was puppeted by, I want to say, like, 8 different people or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And in the new Mortal Kombat, it's 2 dudes, it's a guy standing on top of his shoulders wearing blue, and they're just punching the actor.
Yeah, what kills me, and I might cut it, but in the new Mortal Kombat, there's just, like, the slowness sometimes to CGI fight sequences.
Yeah.
Where, like, especially when, like, Cole jumps around and tries to get him in a headlock, where it's, like, it just doesn't flow because none of it's happening.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's impossible to get CGI action to flow, but just the way they did it was, like, real awkward. And I'm like, I know that forearm dude is not there trying to kill that guy's wife.
Yeah, I mean, but, and we've seen examples of CGI fight scenes working super well, like anything from Marvel, you know.
Yeah.
So it's possible. It's just maybe they just didn't have the budget or the time or whatever, you know, to nail that look and that feel. But I think it's super important, especially if your movie is called Mortal Kombat, to make it feel kinetic and to have big reveals like Goro, right? To actually feel impactful and meaningful.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World, he's got to fight 7 evil exes. The fight scenes are totally comic booky and fun and stylistic, and just the editing is like a goddamn masterpiece. Not an original thought, everybody knows this,
yeah,
but fuck is it good.
It's so
super
good,
super kinetic and really cool, and like all the people he fights have like weird powers or weird personalities, and it's just fun. I like it.
And every fight is unique.
Yeah.
That is something that we didn't mention earlier, but every encounter of action should feel different and important in its own way. Scott Pilgrim nails it so hard. And because each fight is personal as well, too, you know? Oh, it's so good. So good. If I can mention one. Action comedy movie, Hot Fuzz. It is fantastic. Like, top 5 favorite movie. Doesn't really get too action heavy towards the end, but except for towards the end, but it's good. When it goes action, it goes real action.
It does. The supermarket fight, it's good.
They're just throwing so many knives.
Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
God damn.
That huge goddamn turning point in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that kind of like saved it and put it on the right course.
Yeah.
The fucking fight choreography in that movie, just so good. The elevator fight where Captain America takes out like 10 dudes and they're all just trying to beat him to death. Wonderful.
The highway fight?
The highway fight with Bucky Barnes when he's about to get like
stabbed.
Does
the knife trick?
It's super cool. And I love Marvel, but sometimes obviously when you're fighting a bunch of space goons or Iron Man's blasting people in the air, you're like, this is fun, but it doesn't quite feel physical. It doesn't quite feel like it's happening. But in Captain America: Winter Soldier, it's like you're on the street level. And even though you know this guy is a superhero, the bad guys might get him. You know, they're really trying to get him. The whole government wants to kill him. And that's pretty crazy. Like,
well,
they fire a tomahawk at him. And it's just, it's wild. And like, that was a whole different feel. And I think that also kind of carried over into Civil War, where it was like, these are very physical fights. It's, you know, especially when like Bucky Barnes is throwing cinder blocks at the German police. Wild time. He's come around, though. You know, I do like cool gun tricks and shootouts, but I think sometimes people rely on guns a little too much in action movies.
I think so,
and
too.
And that there's a lot of love to be had for hand-to-hand combat. And also when people, like, use the environment in fun ways. Like, oh, I'm going to hit you over the head with, you know, glass, or I'm going to throw something at you, or throw you over a counter or through a window. I think that shit rules. I love when shit breaks. People should always fight in breakable places. It's fun.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because it adds some, like, I don't know, some crunch to it. I love that, like, shot where someone's just gotten thrown through a window. And they're like, they look up, like, ready to keep fighting, and they have glass in their hair. Love those shots. Oh, yeah. They're in every film. But I'm like, hell yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, we're in it now. There's only one Connecticut.
They're like, we're cops, but we hunt demons.
And the assistant walks through a giant portal
that he thought was art. The walls are shaking. Mirrors are falling.
She sees the devil, and I think it might be her dad.
And I'm killing people, and there's a frog detective, and you're...
Welcome to Middle Watch. Our segment where we watch an episode in the middle of a show with no context, and we talk about it. We're not doing it to be mean, although we might be a little bit mean. This is more a celebration of TV, because there's too much TV out there to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of just like to watch a little bit of everything.
We watched Woo Assassins, Season 1, Episode 4. Is it a Netflix exclusive?
I believe so. The episode opens with some dumb kids, and they're like, hey, I know this is the fucking crime capital building in San Francisco, but there's some fireworks in the basement, and I think the best thing that we can do with our time on this earth is to sneak into the basement of this crime facility and steal those fireworks.
Not even, like, stealing fireworks from, like, you know, some crime people. It's literally... the triad.
The, like, the lords of crime, and they're like, you know what? I'm sure they won't mind if we take their things. They roll into the basement, and one guy is supposed to, like, hold the door. He doesn't. They get locked in there. And then, so there's two guards in front of the building, and this magic line of fire approaches them pretty slowly. But mm-hmm. the guards are like, it's probably just normal fire. We should probably leave it alone. And then the fire catches up to them, and they die.
They look at it, and they look at each other and go, they shrug. They go, huh? Whatever. And then it touches them and they burn to death and turn to skeletons.
This dude in a yellow jacket, who I believe mm-hmm. is Uncle Six, he walks into the building and then these crime lords are like, what are you doing here? And then he kills them all.
Everyone has really slow reactions to him.
If I saw somebody ignite fire from their hands, I would run. But they're like, what?
We'll see where this goes.
Maybe he's going to do a trick, you know? Maybe he's going to sell us a pizza. No.
No.
Kills them. And obviously the kids get trapped by the fire, but
yes.
Uncle Six is like, well, I have to save these kids. I'm not a monster. Or is he? I don't know. Then we jump to the present day. Some shit's going down. Okay?
It's weird.
Because, and I think I know what it is, so I will say it. So we have Kai, who's the main character, and he's facing off against Uncle Six. During the fight, it jumps between him and then this bald dude.
Yeah, this old man.
So I think he's using a, like, disguise spell, and that even though the audience knows that it's Kai, the bad dude thinks it's somebody else. So they're tussling. And who, boy, are they tussling? Because Uncle Six is not like, I'll start off slow. He's like, I'm going to throw a fireball, because that's the spell I know.
He's like, that's the thing I do.
Kai just, like, redirects it, almost nonchalantly. He's like, fire over there. Fire over there. Kai gets thrown, like... into a million different cardboard boxes, kick down some stairs.
There's an escalator fight that's real goofy and silly.
At one point, Uncle Six, like, lassos him with fire and then just hurls him through the room.
That's pretty good.
And I'm like, oh, Kai, what are you... Maybe you weren't ready. I feel like this was one of those things where Kai was like, I'm ready. And all of his friends were like, you're not ready. You can't do it. But Kai was like, sure, I can do it. Couldn't do it. And also, it was only episode 4. So I feel like he hasn't quite mastered whatever it is he can do. Can he also summon fire? I couldn't tell. I think maybe he did once.
I don't think so.
Okay, maybe not.
He's a Wu assassin.
He's a Wu assassin. I'm not 100%.
We're not really sure exactly what that is, but it's like a warrior of great renown that is kind of needed for the time being. It kind of feels like a little bit of the Avatar. We'll get into it later.
There's also this blonde lady, and her name is Christine. She's a cop. But while Kai is getting his ass kicked, she takes on, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 security guards.
Yeah.
And just beats them unconscious.
Yeah, I also don't know what her plan was either. Was she gonna kill him?
Well, she technically does get the knockout.
It's true.
Which is weird. So, she takes out 8 different security dudes. And she also gets thrown through glass.
Yeah.
Like, she gets thrown through glass, and she gets up, and she's like, I don't care! And then she jumps back in. And she takes out the last two security dudes, and she pulls her gun, and is like, stop being evil, Uncle Six. And he's like, no. And then Kai kicks him, and the bad guy stumbles back, and then she shoots a chandelier, and these giant pieces of glass fall. I don't know how they don't cut him in half, because it really looks like it would.
I know.
And then she grabs Kai, and they start to, like, run away. And then Uncle Six is like, son? Bad guy's dad? Maybe? I don't know.
I don't know.
But then they leave. And then the rest of the episode happens, and it's not as entertaining as the fight.
No, and that whole fight, that whole sequence, was like 25% of the episode. I thought the whole thing was going to be it.
I wish. I did appreciate, though, that it started with the fighting.
Yes. So, there's a B plot with
the restaurant.
Tommy and Jenny. So they have their parents' restaurant, and I guess they got involved with some triad people or something. They're Kai's friends, so
yes.
Who were also trapped in the basement at the beginning of the episode 15 years ago. Apparently, Jenny has like redone the family restaurant, and Tommy is like kind of a good for nothing dude. Kind of a little bit of a bum, I got the essence of, but he's trying to do better. But everyone kind of
piano player though. So.
Yeah, really good piano player. But everyone kind of like still treats him as a bum, even though he's trying to do better. And their parents are coming to town to look at the restaurant. So they can't. They come at first. Tommy's like, "Nah, I'm not gonna be there because you know I'm a terrible person." And then he shows up because he's like, "I can't let Jenny get like verbally beat up by my parents." By herself, that'd be kind of rude. And the parents, not happy with how the restaurant looks now. There's a plant in the wrong place. And, like, not that my family was like this, but being Chinese, a little bit I was like, I can kind of see this happening in real life, not gonna lie. It's kind of, a little bit afraid of the change, you know? It's like, why aren't things the same as they used to be? Did you hate how we had the restaurant? And they're like, no, we just wanted to make it new and different and like our own thing. And Tommy kind of comes in and stands up for Jenny and kind of makes almost a martyr of himself in order to kind of get them to lay off her a bit. And doesn't go well. Parents go away and everyone's crying.
It was always going to end like that. But I think that was probably my favorite scene. Also, when he's like, we're keeping the fucking rubber plant. Good line. Yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
But I just really like that he's like, we're going to be okay. And then they have that shot where they like hold hands and it both of their backs in the restaurant and it's quiet. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, was that a good scene in fucking Wu Assassin?
Yeah.
But then we move on to other things that I don't care about as much. Like we're in, it's Christine's apartment and Kai's there. He's still beat up because he'd lost. And then they both have some dialogue, I guess. Yeah.
They're in a shower fully clothed. And she's like, who are you? And he's like, oh, I'm dying.
Yeah, he has a fucking fire concussion because also the bad guy tried to burn his head off.
After the shower, which feels gratuitous, he's not wearing pants. And I'm like, where's his pants go? And then she's like, well, I have to go do a thing. So, you know, we'll talk about these weird magic crimes later. And she takes off her pants and puts different pants on, and I'm like, why? Just have her in the other pants the whole time.
It's weird. So I don't know if like if they're dating or interested in each other or what the vibe is there,
because I don't even know if they know each other or whatever, but like
they have to know each other. How'd she know to be there?
I don't know, because the screenwriter wanted it to happen. I don't know. Kai kind of goes, he like kind of meditates a wee bit. And he talks to the first ever Wu assassin in this, like, kind of this, like, mental spirit realm, which looks like just Chinatown, but neon.
Yep.
And she shows him all these terracotta statues of the past. It was, like, 99,000 or whatever past Wu assassins that all tried to complete their mission but failed.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why even have these? After like 10 assassins, you'd be like, man, this is probably not working. And so she's like, I was the first ever Wu assassin. I killed all these people and I tracked them down and I imprisoned them within this tortoise shell. And then I got attacked by one dude and his first strike broke the tortoise shell, sending all the elemental
across the globe.
And I'm like, maybe don't use it as a shield if it's so fragile.
My problem is, so the episode starts with that fight that was actually like pretty cool and choreographed pretty well and kind of fun, and we had fire. And then they show this flashback scene of a woman with like this turtle armor that looks like it was filmed in the 1970s or 1980s. Like, it's so bad.
It's real campy.
Why they put it in the episode. I'm like, don't put it in the episode. The end of the episode has a big twist, everybody. Get ready. They keep talking about this guy named Alec, and they're like, he's important. And I'm like, why? And they're like, he's important. And, it, you know, he's like a bad guy and he has the whole criminal empire and he wants more cars. Uncle Six shows up at Alec's place and he's like, hey. And Alec is like, I've been waiting for you. And for a second, you're like, is it going to kill him? But then they shake hands and you're like, oh no. But then they go back to Dream World, and they show all the statues. And one of the statues is of Alec. So he's a Wu assassin, but bad. Oh my God. That's it.
I thought that you had to die in order to pass on the Wu assassin.
That is the vibe I got. I thought there was only one at a time. I mean, the name of the show is plural. So maybe that's my fault.
Because I thought it was a little bit like an Avatar kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
I will give them points. The cast, primarily Asian, which is like rad as hell. We love to see that. It just it wasn't for me, you know?
Yeah, I think if they had kept that energy that they had in the beginning, because I those first 15 minutes, I'm like, okay. But then it keeps going, and I'm like, huh.
Which also makes you question, was there any fights leading up to this, like beforehand, or like...
If it had just been the fight, and then even the rubber plant stuff, I would have been like, okay. But then they have to be like, well, they're taking a shower, and she's a cool cop, and also the turtle shell. And I'm like, oh, there's a lot of dumb here, too. Not quite Merlin, not yet.
No, no. We'll get there. Merlin 2.
1, 2...
Welcome to Newstown, where we tell you things you probably already know, but you might not. Marvel did a little video recently that was kind of like, hey, we like to make movies. We know it's been a little hard recently, but we got some movies coming up in the future. And you should be excited about that. Shang-Chi is now officially coming out September 3rd, which, you know, not too far away.
No, that's actually pretty dang close.
We got to see a very, very tiny fraction of footage from the Eternals. It's weird and in space, but on Earth, I don't know. And that comes out on November 5th. Black Panther 2 is now Black Panther Wakanda Forever, and that comes out in July of 2022. Captain Marvel 2 is now called The Marvels, and that comes out in November of 2022. I think that's a fun title. Loki is premiering on June 9th. I think that's a couple days early from what they were originally doing.
Yeah, and it's going to be on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Which, instead of Fridays. Okay. Gross. Just kidding. It's fine.
Bo Burnham announced a new special that he shot during the pandemic called Inside, because, you know, we were all inside. No real release date on that.
The pan what now? The pandemic?
Oh, sorry.
What happened? Did something happen?
Whoops. But that's like a Netflix exclusive, and I imagine that'll come out probably in the next couple of months, so that's fun.
Yeah.
We've already talked about this before, but now Warner Brothers is officially searching for a black director for this new black Superman film they're working on. And this is kind of a cool, high-profile project. It's going to be kind of set in its own universe, so not connected to the fucking train wreck of the Snyderverse, which I think is maybe a good call.
Yep.
We have other things coming. So we have to deal with the Tomorrow War.
Yeah, it's on Amazon.
Yeah, it's an Amazon movie coming out July 2nd. And Chris Pratt is fighting aliens, I think, 30 years in the future. I think, to be funny, they should come out a day early because of time travel. The teaser is real vague. It's just like, you're going to watch a city block get blown up by a jet. We're going to play something vaguely patriotic. And is that a worm? That's the teaser. I think literally today, Netflix announced this movie called Awake, which comes out June 9th. And it's like this sci-fi film where, first of all the technology goes out. Wow, what a trope. But wait, there's more, and it's dumber than you could possibly imagine. You know what the people are all battling in this one? They can't sleep. They just can't go to sleep. That's it. That's the film. But the main character's daughter, she can sleep. Oh no. And it's like, oh, people haven't slept for 4 days. They're forming a cult now, and they're all naked in the street, and they're killing people. And I'm like, what? Is this, what is this?
You know,
this
I just hold like my breath for a long time till I passed out. That's how I would not sleep.
It's just a weird, it's a weird pitch, and I think it might be a stinker.
You think? What gave you that impression?
The whole bit of it. Netflix also announced recently a show called 1899, and it's from the creators of Dark.
Oh.
And it's about this ship full of immigrants, and they're, you know, they're seeking a better life in America. But on the way, they discover this abandoned ship, and then nightmares ensue. I assume it's, like, either haunted or, like, it's another universe or another dimension. I'm sure it's fucking wild.
Why would you do that? If you see something that there's nobody in, there's a reason.
I read that they're filming it in, like, one of those weird Disney cube prism things where you don't actually have to go
that's
outside.
Rad.
So we'll probably get it sooner rather than later. But I'm excited. I'm excited for, like, a weird, cool Netflix thing. They also announced a really weird show, could go either way, called Sweet Tooth, which comes out June 4th, where it's like deer people hybrids, but also there was an apocalypse, but they call it the Great Crumble, which I think is unacceptable.
On the Great British Bake Off, they also talk about the Great Crumble, you know?
Back for Blood, which is kind of the new Left 4 Dead game.
Yes.
By the studio who made, like, the original Left 4 Dead, introduced this cool thing where it's like a card system where each, like, level that you go on will be kind of randomized, but in a fun way, where the AI will draft, like, a series of cards where it's, like, these disadvantages to you. Like, there'll be this many special monsters, or maybe there'll be, like, a new challenge or something you have to find.
Sure.
And then you can prepare against that by adding your own bonuses. What I'm trying to say is they're employing this cool advanced AI, which is going to make, like, encounters randomized and make sure mm-hmm. that every playthrough is kind of different, and then your strategies for that playthrough will also be different. So there's, like, a high replayability value, and it should be a lot of fun. I really like, you know, fighting monsters in co-op land. They also announced after the end of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which yes. I think was fantastic, they're like, hey, Captain America 4, we're gonna fucking do it. So we have two people that wrote for the show who are gonna write this movie. It's going to be, like, Sam Wilson's big, huge moment. I'm sure Bucky Barnes will be there with his trademark sass. And there's all kinds of rumors of old characters and fan-favorite villains. And I think this is one of my most anticipated, like, Marvel movies now, because, like, the show was really fucking good. And I'm really glad that Sam Wilson is going to get to have, like, a big theatrical moment. I feel like U.S. Agent is going to be probably
a real stinker.
An antagonist, either on purpose or on accident, because he didn't vet the people he was working for, which is a big mistake.
Maybe they're Hydra.
But hey, that'll be a fun reveal in the future that we'll pretend to be surprised by. But that is my news.
Well, you know what time it is?
What time is it?
Cyberpunk news time. So, this one, a little bit of a bummer.
It's always a bummer.
It's true. As part of the kind of employee contracts that CD Projekt Red employees sign, they get bonuses that reflect game sales. And, you know, if they shipped the game that year, they get a bonus at the end of the year. End of the fiscal year happened just recently, right? A couple days ago. 865 employees are sharing a profit of $29.8 million, which is pretty good. I don't know math, so if you want to divide that and say how, you know, obviously that not everyone's going to get the exact same amount because contracts are negotiated differently, but, you know, you can kind of get an average of what people are going to get. However, the thing that is a little bit gross and a little bit sketchy, five board members are sharing $28 million.
Oh.
And that's kind of gross because it was those same board members who rushed the game to launch in its very broken and currently broken state. So, yay, they're getting paid more. They're getting paid a shit ton more. And so it's one of those things where, you know, it's like, are they going to learn? You'd hope. You know, because you can't blame this the you know, the developers on kind of the nightmare that this is. You got to kind of blame the executives who let it happen and kind of push for it to happen.
And then, like, continue to crunch even though they knew. They had to have known that it was not going to be ready no matter what they said.
So it's pretty gross. There is a significant shift in the company. People are now working on newer products, specifically a Witcher spinoff. I think it's a Witcher spinoff. And so only 40% of the company now is working on support and DLC for Cyberpunk. It should be the support, because the game, there's some changes, but boy, did they not fix everything. Shout out to these developers for keeping on. I'm sure it's just defeating just hearing about what people think, because, you know, it's, people are still talking about it. That's your Cyberpunk update for this week. Fingers crossed for some better news.
Hope springs eternal. Hope springs eternal for Cyberpunk, baby. Final things that I will say.
Please.
I want to throw out some recommendations, some things that I really enjoyed. I finished Invincible recently on Amazon Prime. It's so good. And then, like, it kept getting good, and it's really cool, and they set up all kinds of shit in the future, and I think it could go on for a really long time, and I really like it. I really like it. It's just good. I won Control recently, and I'm going to say it's super hard.
Yep.
But it's very rewarding, and it's so fucking weird. And, like, they really, the people who made the game spent so much time developing, like, the setting, because it's, like, this infinite building called the Oldest House, and it's constantly shifting and changing, and sometimes you teleport into a hotel, and sometimes, you know, you fly to fucking Norwegian rock and roll. It's great. It's just a really good game that I really recommend. And also, The Mitchells versus the Machines is a new Netflix animated film that Netflix bought for a lot of money, and it was super fucking worth it because it's great. Honestly, wouldn't be surprised if it took the Academy Award.
Damn.
Because it's just, it's fucking at that level. It's good.
I don't know if I mentioned this last time, but I finished season 2 of For All Mankind on Apple Plus.
How was it?
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. There's shenanigans on the moon. Soviets doing shit. America's doing shit. America started it, honestly. Not gonna lie. It's a very good season. It kind of builds on the relationships and stuff like that shown in season 1. There's like a 9-year time gap, too, between both seasons. And I'm very excited for season 3. And the showrunner wants to do 7 seasons, so I'm like, I'm for it. I recommend it if you have Apple Plus or whatever. It's a weird service to have. I got it because I got a new computer, and they gave it to me for a year for free.
I still have a couple months free.
Yeah, I have until August, so better hope Ted Lasso comes out then.
Yeah, I know. Ted, hurry. Ted.
Please, Ted. I've been playing a lot of Monster Hunter Rise. It's really good. If you have a Switch, buy it. It's a really approachable entry to the game, to the series, if you haven't played a Monster Hunter game before. Our good buddy Riku and I have been playing that, like, nonstop.
I'm this, and I'm this, and welcome to our video.
We have a reptile.